Welcome back to Healthy Conversations. This week, I sit down with Jonathan Munson from Saddleback Leather. We dive into their story from starting in Mexico to future plans, as well as what they've been up to the past few years here in Fort Worth. We talk extensively about their corporate culture, mission, and how others can do the same. Enjoy. Jonathan, thanks for coming on Healthy Conversations. We can jump right on in.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about Saddleback and what you guys do for somebody that might never have heard of you guys.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So Saddleback Leather Company basically is, it's my brother, Dave Munson, who owns the company. And we create over-engineered full grain leather bags. Our motto is they'll fight over when you're dead. Everything carries a 100-year warranty. One of the things we pride ourselves in. We don't necessarily say that we make the highest quality bags in the world, because that can be kind of subjective, right? Mm-hmm. You know, oh, there's these fine Italian leathers and there's these, you know, different exotic skins. But what we do say is we like to claim we make the most durable bags in the world.
Awesome.
So yeah.
And you guys are based here in Fort Worth, correct?
That's right. Yeah. The company used to telecommute a lot. So we had people in Scotland working. We had people all over the States. And made a decision in 2016 to really bring everybody to a corporate headquarters. And we just happened to have our family living here up in Keller. So Fort Worth became the place that we ended up moving to. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun since then.
Very cool. How has that kind of transition been into a physical office? And you guys manufacture in Mexico, correct?
That's right. Yeah. So the company started in Mexico. That's where the bags were first made. That's where Dave was actually working with youth. So just a little bit about the background of the company, if you want to go for it. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. Dave was he's that entrepreneur, visionary, creative guy. Started out. He has a Bible degree actually from a theology school, and he was working with youth up until he started making his first bags. So I like to tell people, he doesn't say this in his kind of all of his podcasts and stuff he's on, but man, he had never made more than $12,000 on a tax return up until the age of 33. Kind of gives you an idea of,
context.
Yeah. So he was living on support. He had different people. Yeah. Just to work with youth, man, because that was his passion. He wanted to help people. So he's down there in Mexico in Morelia teaching English, and he needed a book. He needed a bag to carry his books. So he prayed. He said, God, would you help me find the coolest leather bag out there? Now he'd always had kind of this passion for leather. So he went to all the markets and he could not find a bag he wanted. He ended up finding this father-son team. And he asked him who did leather there in Morelia. And he said, hey, if I sketch out this bag design, can you make it for me? So he sketched it out. They made it. And this was 1999. And everywhere he went, man, just people would stop him. Oh my gosh, where'd you get that bag? That thing is amazing. So he started, he thought, man, maybe there's something here. Maybe I don't have to, ask people for support anymore to work with youth. And maybe I can sell some bags and it'll support what I'm doing. And it just kept building and growing from there.
So it really grew kind of from a pure word of mouth perspective for kind of how long until it really started being run more like it. A business, or I guess another question, how long did he live in Mexico?
Yeah, so he was down in Mexico for quite a while, from off and on from 99 to 2006.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was there for a while. What ended up happening, so I actually moved down when I was 18. We lived together down in Mexico right after high school. We were selling real estate on a country club down there. And so, yeah, I mean, I was, we'd go to the local like mall, and there's this little, kind of one of those displays of the whole development sitting there. And mm-hmm. My job was to get people to stop, and I would get them to go on a tour, and then I take them on a tour and try and sell them real estate. So we did that for 6 months.
How was that?
It was good, man. I had to learn Spanish quick.
Did you sell anything?
I sold one lot.
One lot.
One lot, man. But it was like a $3,500 commission. I taught English on the side to make a little, kind of make ends meet. I ended up getting fired. Kind of funny story. It's the only job I've ever gotten fired from because I didn't stand up in the presence of the owner's wife when she walked in. I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
So she fired me for not
She fired you?
Yeah, for not giving the proper respect of standing up in her honor. We kind of worked for a shady family down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, but real quick, so like yeah, 2003, man, he had a Land Cruiser. And he drove around Mexico with his dog, Blue, his Labrador. He ended up having 12 bags made, and he went up to Portland, Oregon, and sold them off the side of his Land Cruiser in about 2 hours. So he's like, man, I think there's something here. So he moved to Juarez, Mexico, and he lived in a $100 a month apartment for 3 years. No AC, no heat, you know, no like, you know, no hot water, kind of in a bad area of Juarez. And what he'd do is he'd have these bags made down in Morelia. He'd ship them up on the bus. He'd take them across the border to a friend of his who owned a mechanic shop, and he'd sell them on eBay at night. And so that's kind of how the company was built in the beginning.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did he have a family at that time? Like, that seems quite the interesting kind of living situation. How did he kind of make that work, living on $100 a month?
Well, I would say that the only way it did work was because he was a single guy.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't. His wife now would not have joined him. I know for a fact. My sister-in-law said that. Yeah, would not have joined him in that $100 a month apartment down in Juarez.
Interesting.
He ended up meeting her in 2006 on MySpace.
Okay.
Yeah. So he used to have a MySpace to keep up with his youth group kids. And they met. And man, it was like 6 months later, they were married. I think it just started growing from there. 2008, they started the factory down in Mexico.
Okay. Does the company like outsource that, or is that part of Saddleback Leather? Just because that'd probably be two totally different style companies. What's that kind of like, and what does that look like, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, you know, we have a kind of a heart for Mexico. Yeah. You know, we've lived there. We love the people. We were having a difficult time. The father, son just couldn't keep up with the production anymore. Mm-hmm. And we really wanted to keep one of our kind of core principles in our company is the high quality. And that's, we make everything we make so that it won't break down, you know, for 100 years. That's the idea. So in order to kind of control that, we started our own factory in 2008 and started building that factory. And so that, it's called Old Mexico Manufacturing. It's located in León, Guanajuato, which is central Mexico. Very safe, nice area of Mexico. It's known as the leather capital of the world. Some people would call it that. So huge tanneries down there, generations of leather workers, a lot of shoes come out of there. So luckily, it's been a process, but we've honed down and gotten better and better at what we do over the years, and we now also produce for other leather companies.
Okay,
yeah,
interesting. I was looking at kind of your company history and whatnot, and 2007 seemed to be kind of a big year. What kind of started leading to that growth? Was it the internet and changes like that, how you were marketing, or just kind of got to a point where word of mouth had gotten out?
I think one of the big things was Dave getting married. You know, it kind of centered him a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Got him. And that was when we first launched our website.
So what?
Yeah.
Okay. Around that time.
Thinking it was 07. And our first site, what was nice about that back in the day was it actually got tons of awards for the design, and it was, you know, we got a lot of visibility because of our website, because it was such a cool website. It was very much focused around adventure, around the traveling, around the story. We ended up being written about by different marketing folks who said, man, these guys do everything wrong and it's working. Because Dave's a storyteller and that's what he does, right? And you know, they always say too much text, you're not going to sell stuff. If you got this retail site, don't make it full of all this text. But that's, he just totally went against that. And he had really long, interesting stories about his life. And people, what it did was, is it was starting that base of hardcore fans who really follow and love the brand today. So it might not have generated as much, we weren't selling as much or closing as many deals, but what it did is it engendered people who really loved the brand and followed us from then on.
Okay. And do you think that's all centered around kind of the travel and the mission around that? Or what do you think? Where does that really start, in your opinion?
Right. So we ask that same question internally all the time, right? When we're doing our marketing research, trying to understand I mean, our fans are some of the greatest people out there. We love them, truly do love these guys. And we like hanging out with them. And they're a very unique kind of set of people. So we have the folks who really love the mission of the company. And really, that hasn't changed since Dave's was working with youth. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's in a lot of ways, it's kind of hindered our growth in the past because we were giving too much away. That's just the reality of mm-hmm. it. So there's that aspect. There's people who really love the mission that when they're buying a bag, this is going to support either an orphan in Africa. It's going to support Mexican kids in Mexico. It's going to support prison ministry, prisoners, helping them reintegrate into society here in the States. They love that. And then you have the folks who aren't too interested in the spiritual side or that side of the company. And they just want something that's not going to break down yeah. that they're going to have to throw into a landfill in a couple of years. They want a good bag that they can use and pass on to their grandkids someday.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think you kind of cover both aspects from the product as well as marrying that with the culture and kind of the mission. Any advice for companies trying to figure out how to coordinate those two often conflicting things? Just because you guys really have been doing it for 20 plus years, even before it was popular to kind of do that as much as it is today.
Yeah, that's true. No. Well, I think if you truly have a passion for that, I think what a lot of people find is if you're living your life, and this is just from a sidebar from yeah. business, right? If you're living your life just to see what you can get, the most you can get out of it, if you're trying to live your life to be the country club guy with the big house and all the toys, the reality is if you've met a lot of those people, right? There's a lack of joy and happiness in their life. It's just true. But there is something about, even if it's not with a higher purpose, focusing on others and helping people. You see that with like Bill Gates and, you know, some of these folks who are donating their fortunes and their life is all around philanthropy. And it may not have a spiritual connection, but they're seeing the benefits of what joy that brings in helping folks. So I would say that if you're a business looking at, you know, should you move that direction, period. If you're not a giving person, if you're not somebody who focuses on other people, try and develop that. Find out why that is, because we have a ton of fun, man, at Saddleback
yeah,
with all the stories that we hear and stuff. Yeah. And the lives that are changed, you know, I think Dave and Suzette, they sponsor about 20 kids now down in Africa and bringing them through college. And these are kids who were part of the Rwandan genocide. Their parents were slaughtered in front of them. Horrible stories, man. They lived on the streets, lived in the dumps, begged, huffed chemicals to keep from being hungry, stole, all that sort of thing. And now they get fed, they have education. There's something powerful, man, when you're involved in that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But you know what? I would say one thing on the business, let me move over to the business side real quick.
Yeah, it'd be helpful.
So the business side is, be careful that you're balancing how much you're giving, what you're supporting with the health of the business itself. So I think, you know, if you really want to make a bigger impact, right, you need your revenue to grow and you're able to give a bigger, you know, as the pie grows, the bigger part of that pie you can give to help people. But if you're not focused on the health and it's not growing, you got to be really careful because you're going to kill the golden goose, right? It's laying the golden eggs.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier these days because you're millennial, right?
Yeah.
My millennial generation. Like we don't want to buy, first off, we don't want to buy low quality stuff.
No.
And two, we love buying stuff that has like a purpose behind it, you know, and a story. And so I think it's a lot easier to get into that these days.
Interesting. How do you guys think, all of that was very centered around giving and whatnot. Does that translate, I assume, over to the employee experience and things like that? Like, what does kind of the Saddleback employee typically look like, just given you've got the Mexico employees, you've got, you were online, you've moved to brick and mortar here in Fort Worth? Like, what does that kind of look like? And how do you think of that as you continue to grow?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, that's been kind of a pain point, a little bit of a difficult transition that we've had. First, that we've had these people who were remote And we said, hey, we need really for the health of the company and to grow, we need you to move to Fort Worth. And a lot of people just couldn't make that.
Yeah.
And so we had to let people go. And we've, so there's been a lot of transition. I'd say early on in the company, there was a focus on the people who were coming to work for the company were really big into the mission of the company.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And because we were giving so much away, honestly, we were, our salaries and our pay were below industry average.
Okay.
But people were willing, people with lots of experience and in the business world came and took a pay cut just to be a part of the story. I don't know that was necessarily the right, it's just how it worked because of Dave's experience as a missionary and working in with youth and stuff. But we've since realized the importance of what a company culture needs to be. And when you need to pay people, you know, the correct wages.
Yeah, at least, you know, market standard.
Exactly. So we've tried to get a better balance now in the company, but we're still working toward that, to be honest. It's,
gotcha.
It's a tough thing.
I've seen kind of a number of the videos that you guys have put out. You've kind of along the mission, the travel, all of it seems to work very well together. Some of your videos have tons of hits on YouTube and whatnot. Any advice for somebody that is starting to put out content, maybe locally, how you guys think of kind of your marketing efforts? I mean, it might be, it's a little easier for you guys just given the amount of content and kind of the nature of your business, but any advice there?
Yeah. Yeah. So we found, and you know, if you want to become good at podcasting, go podcast. If you want to be good, start getting good at doing videos, go do videos, right? It's don't need anybody out there who's trying to do, yeah, who's trying to break into the sphere. Don't go try and get a course in YouTube videos. Just grab your phone, grab a video and start videoing and talking on the video. That's how we learned. So I think our first video, man, it was like the first video that really, I guess you in quotes, go viral, was our how to knock off a bag video. I think that was number 228 or something of videos that we had launched. That got us some really cool publicity. I mean, people still, when they come, fans who I meet with, they go, oh man, I watched that video about how to knock off a bag and dude, I just was sold and I had to go get one. But that got us on NPR Marketplace. That got us on Fox News Business. That got us on a lot of local news programs. What we did was, and we were learning, right? So we one of the big things was if you have the right people, if you have really talented people on your team, which what we did, we hired a film guy. And all he does is he's a film documentarian. So we ended up producing two films that were in the Sundance Film Festival, got in. I think it's 2013.
Totally unrelated to leather, anything you guys are doing, correct?
That's right. It was one was an employee profile of two of our employees who met, or an employee who was a customer service agent who met a fan and they got married. And so there was an employee profile, got into the Sundance Film Festival. And the second one was my niece has type 1 diabetes. And it was about the you know, what it's like living with that. And it's called Midnight 3 and 6, if anybody's interested in that video. So how to knock off a bag was our response to a lot of these companies that were just knocking off our stuff, coming completely. We even had people knocking off and copying our website word for word and trying to sell Saddlebag bags. So instead of spending the hundreds of thousands of dollars to try and fight that stuff, we just decided to make a film making fun of them, pretty
much. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is that still kind of company-wide how you guys handle that? Because I'm sure it's still prevalent today.
Yeah, I mean, if you got somebody copying and, you know, using your trademark, your name, Saddleback Leather, we're gonna do something legal.
Yeah, for that. Sure.
But yeah, it's not really worth it. And our fans also know it's honestly a little embarrassing when somebody has like a knockoff bag. Like they'll walk around and somebody will go, "Dude, is that a Saddleback bag?" And it's like this awkward, embarrassing, you know, like, no, you know, I don't think so. But it looks just like one, yeah. Right? Yeah. And then, so now we've been doing more like how it's made type of stuff.
Okay.
So, and that's been our biggest video. So we did our iPhone case because we're pretty sure it's the only all fully leather iPhone case in the world. There's Apple, all those are just plastic cases with a veneer of leather. This one actually is a fully leather iPhone case. And that's, I think it's up to about 10 million views now.
Oh, wow. So
we've been pretty excited about that one.
That's awesome. As things continue to go digital, how is it operating kind of in that space as well as here in Fort Worth and Mexico? Like, how How do you guys think of it as you continue to grow? Is that still your main driver, is just pure online sales?
So that goes to a lot of the planning and strategy that we're currently like talking about, mm-hmm. right? There's a couple of avenues. We've always been a 100% online company. And that was just decided from the very beginning. And really, we never built a wholesale pricing model into our structure. So for us to, you know, if we make a briefcase that costs us $300, we sell it for $600. Whereas normally, right, if you had that model where you're reselling in a store, sell for $600 to the store, they sell it for $1,200. And so we never built that into our pricing structure. What we want to do, I think, ultimately, is get involved here in Fort Worth. It's a really cool city, you know.
As we've
gone around, we've met at different functions, right? We've been to different events together, and man, as you start seeing the potential here and all the people and the culture, we'd really love to start opening up some stores. So it's funny, whereas people are going digital, we want to go the brick and mortar route.
Okay. Kind of like what Yeti's been doing as they slowly open.
Exactly.
Okay.
And Yeti, yeah, it's funny. We've done some stuff with Yeti. So we have a very similar kind of
philosophy,
and also people who just love, you know, kind of a hardcore love for a brand.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What have you guys done with them?
We've done some corporate stuff with them, just some different, like their opening of their flagship store. You know,
yeah, I think they just opened one in South Carolina, right?
Well, their flagship, I think, was Austin.
Yeah.
That's when they opened that. And
gotcha.
We sent them a bunch of stuff. And we've also, for different promotions we've done, they've sent us Yeti coolers to send out with our stuff. And a good high-quality brand. We like to associate with good high-quality brands. Toyota, if you're listening. We like to associate with high quality brands.
They might be listening in Dallas.
There you go.
How do you guys think of kind of your cult-like following and who kind of came up with the "they'll fight over it when you're dead"? Did that come very early on?
Yeah.
That's an awesome thing, by the way.
You know, it's so funny because when that was all Dave. And that was honestly when he was making that first bag, that was his. It was kind of this weird, it was this prayer. He really did pray over this bag. And he said, "God, help this to be the coolest briefcase in the world." He wanted something Indiana Jones would wear, you know, would carry. And he said, "I'd really like this bag to be something my kids will fight over someday. It's when I'm dead." And that's just what he said in this prayer. And that's kind of how it all came to being, was in that first bag. It's funny though, when he had friends who were marketing guys, and they're like, "Oh no, that's a horror. Don't you want your brand to be associated with anything negative? I mean, death, come on. Do you want people to be thinking about death when they think of your bag?" You know? And he went with it anyways.
Yeah. It's ignoring.
Yeah. He ignored a lot of marketing advice in the beginning, and I think it worked out.
Yeah, it has worked out. We can kind of wrap up here. For anybody that hasn't heard of Saddleback, where can they find you guys? And I'll put the link in kind of the episode and whatnot, but awesome, any tips there?
Yeah. Hey, so saddlebackleather.com. Go on there. We have our YouTube channel at Saddleback Bags. You can come check us out on Facebook. There's also a lot of fan groups on Facebook. So just type in Saddleback Leather fan group, and you'll actually, a lot of our fans know more about the company than we do. We've actually forgotten a lot about the different stuff we've done in the past. And also we have a leather showroom now in our corporate headquarters just off of Blue Mound Road in 820 in North Fort Worth. Love having people come in and check out our leather in person.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Jonathan.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. It's Matt. Thanks again for tuning in to Healthy Conversations. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, write a quick review. If you really loved it, share the episode on social media. It really helps our iTunes ranking. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.